So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols.
This is our adrenal recharge blueprint. And the blueprint is how, it's like a summary, it's a little roadmap of how we're going to approach somebody with adrenal problems. So we start with identification of their exhaustion index. Where do they sit? Are they in stage one, stage two, stage three? Are they in the alarm state? Are they perfectly normal? What's going on there? And you do that with quiz, exam, and lab findings. Next, you identify your stressors. So what is it that's causing them to be in that state? Is it mental and emotional stuff, worry, fear, anger, all those sorts of things? Do they have some hidden infections somewhere in their body? Do they have some diet and lifestyle habits that are pretty stressful to the body, you know, like refined foods and processed grains and processed fats that are oxidized and creating free radical stress on the body, or gluten, which is creating, you know, gut and inflammatory stress? Or is it stress from the environment? So you're going to be helping them to identify what those stresses are so that you can, one at a time, remove those stresses. And then we have the transforming stress, and as we go down below, it says get energized. What are some of those steps that you can take with people to help them to restore their adrenal function? And it's going to depend on where they are from the test standpoint if you get them to do the test. And if you don't get them to do the test, then you're going to make your best guesstimate, but you're going to make sure that you're explaining to them that it's a best guesstimate as opposed to really being able to hone in based on laboratory findings. So we've got the transforming stress, we've got optimizing diet, we've got supplemental nutrients, and we've got herbs. And we're going to go through those in a stage. And mixed in with that would be bioidentical hormones, and that's not a first resort, but it just depends on the situation that they're in. What can and often does go wrong with the adrenals is they can overproduce cortisol, and that's in the alarm state and what we call stage one. It can cause imbalances in the other hormones. So high cortisol naturally results in lower DHA, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, and thyroid hormone, and also oxytocin, which is our love hormone, our hormone of touch. And it can lead to adrenal fatigue and exhaustion. So after a long period of overproduction of cortisol, we then go into the underproduction. The adrenals just can't do it anymore, and then we're flat out. The tank is on empty, and we're not able to perform. You're going to see a lot of patients like this. You're going to see them come in like this. They've been there, done that, been through the alarm state and the stage one and the stage two, and now they're depleted. It'd be great if you can catch more people in those first couple of stages, but not always going to happen. You're going to have to be prepared. Just to review, the cortisol gets produced in a diurnal rhythm, a circadian rhythm. It's at its peak first thing in the morning, anywhere from 6 to 8, depending on when the sun rises. Generally, the rhythm is dictated by the sun, although we live in artificial environments, so we're not as dictated by the sun per se, because people have, you know, the shades on that block out all the light, so we don't even know when the sun really comes up. So it's basically the cortisol comes up when we have light and get up. And then it starts to make its way down pretty dramatically throughout the day, so that by the time you go to bed at night, it's supposed to be at its all-time low, so a person can actually fall asleep. And when we look at some of these adrenal tests, we're going to see that sometimes that doesn't happen, that it doesn't quite get down to where it's supposed to get at the end of the day, and people can't fall asleep. Or it gets there, and it doesn't stay there, and it starts to rise. Instead of starting to rise between, say, 4 and 6 a.m., or 4 4 and 8 a.m., it starts a gradual rise after that. And this chart is a little, this is a very artistic chart. It's not all that accurate in terms of the way that things climb. It usually stays pretty flatlined throughout the night, and then it starts to rise up at around 4. So somewhere like, you know, 2 to 3 hours before sunrise, that it starts to do a gradual climb up so that it's at its peak at around, you know, 6 to 8 a.m. So this is the fun chart of really what happens whenever we have the perceived tigers chasing us. So the acute or chronic stress is the acute or perceived stress, the real or perceived stress, is it enters through the senses. You know, it might be, you know, something we see, something you hear. It affects a part of the brain called the amygdala. The amygdala then stimulates the hypothalamus to say, hey, we need protection. There's something dangerous. The hypothalamus does two things. It stimulates the autonomic nervous system, and it stimulates the anterior pituitary. On the anterior pituitary side, it stimulates the release of ACTH, adrenal corticotropic hormone, which then stimulates the adrenal cortex to produce cortisol. Meanwhile, the ANS is quicker, right? It works quicker. The autonomic nervous system quickly stimulates the adrenal medulla to produce adrenaline and noradrenaline. And that causes people to go, and run, right? That's that immediate, you know, lift the tiger off the kid and, you know, fight the tiger to get your kid out of the way. Superhuman properties often happen, superhuman traits to help people get out of stress. And then you run away, and then the adrenaline levels come down, but the cortisol is there to pick up the slack. But the thing about the cortisol, it's going to maintain that response so that you can continue to, you know, run away, fight, do whatever you need to do. And in our society today, we don't even get the feedback that we don't need the cortisol anymore because there's a constant stream of this stuff, and this is how the adrenals get burned out. But the cortisol has an effect on digestion, basically shuts it down, right? The cortisol has an effect on the immune system. It basically shuts it down. The cortisol has an effect on the cardiovascular respiratory, and it speeds that up, right? It increases the blood pressure. It increases the heart rate. It increases the respiration. So, indeed, if there really is a tiger, that we're ready to do what we have to fight, to get the blood shunted to the extremities. Cortisol also affects inflammatory parts of the body. It causes an increase in specific cytokines, which are inflammatory chemicals, and interleukins, in particular IL-1 and IL-6, and then something called TNF-alpha. These are all very potent inflammatory chemicals, right? They're meant to help the body in the case of extreme stress. But the problem with those cytokines is they depress thyroid function. They decrease the T4 to T3 conversion, and they cause a problem with the receptors for thyroid on every cell in the body. It causes them to be less effective. So this constant stream of stress is affecting the body in many ways, and you've got to be able to look at your client when they come in and know, oh, wait a minute, maybe this digestive issue is a stress issue, or maybe the digestion is a stress that's causing it to self-propagate. Right? Maybe this thyroid problem isn't a real true thyroid problem in and of itself. Maybe it's from the inflammation caused by chronic adrenal stress. So for you, you're teasing it out. The cortisol also affects blood sugar in that it raises the blood sugar, causes the body to release stores of sugar so that it gets into the bloodstream. So of course, what? You can run away from that tiger. That affects the thyroid. It inhibits the production of TSH and the effectiveness of the thyroid hormones. It also, the thyroid affects the blood sugar, so they're back and forth. And if we don't have proper thyroid function, we can't get good blood sugar, and vice versa. So it's this vicious cycle that perpetuates itself, and the way that we get in there is to stop the stress, which is that first, identify the obstacles. And this is just a review of the various systems we just talked about that get affected by unmanaged adrenal issues. And this is what happens on the sex hormone side, because you're going to get a lot of folks in that say, I lost my sex drive, I have PMS, I'm having hot flashes, and they're going to want something. What nutrient do you have for that? What herb do you have for that? And you've got to be astute enough to know that those hormones generally do not go out of balance on their own and in a vacuum. They go out of balance because they're missing the building block, which upstream from that is good old pregnenolone. Pregnenolone is grandma, and cortisol comes from it, as does estrogen. Three estrogens are the pink ones here, estrogens, testosterone, DHEA, and all these others are intermediates. And they're not insignificant intermediates, they're just not things that people know about. And sometimes when we are doing the detective work to figure out what's going on with people, we need to look at some of those metabolites. You know, the thing is, it's the stress, and when you can get people to put into practice some really good habits to get rid of the stress, then or manage the stress, then a lot of those problems will stay fixed after you do the herbs and the diet and all the other things. So before we step in and go into how we're going to manage this, I wanted to review with you that it's a vicious cycle, and stress is the initiator. And whether that stress be, like I said, the mental, emotional stress, the environmental stress of all the crazy chemicals in the environment, the GMO foods, the pesticides, the herbicides, the aflatoxin, the processed hydrogenated oils, oxidized fats, all that stuff plays in, lack of sleep, that's a stress, and it affects all the systems. And the adrenals have to step in, and it affects the blood sugar, it affects the thyroid, it affects the digestion, and there's all these crazy interactions between them. And it's difficult to just choose one and just fix that. You really have to be working on all of it to get some results. So you need to be able to teach people to manage their stress, help them repair and recharge their adrenals, get their blood sugar in balance, heal and optimize their digestion, and protect and heal the thyroid. But you can be addressing all of them concurrently. You need to make a decision based on how much compliance you can get with a person. Because if you don't heal the digestion, the adrenals are going to continue to have the stress of a leaky gut and imbalanced digestion, right? If you don't get the blood sugar balance, the adrenals are going to be have a problem because the blood sugar is the blood sugar swings are putting a stress on the adrenals and causing it to release cortisol to bring the sugars back up, etc. And of course, thyroid, I think, comes after you've dealt with the other things, or at least concurrently, because the thyroid generally is not going to go out of balance, usually goes out of balance based on digestion, blood sugar, and adrenals, and you know, all the stresses in the environment. And just a review of what the HPAT axis is, the hypothalamus stimulates the pituitary, which stimulates the adrenal and the thyroid. And the thyroid gets stimulated directly by the pituitary, but also by adrenal stress. And we call it the HPAT axis. And the things we're going to talk about that address cleaning up the adrenals will address this HPAT axis. There are certain signs that the person will have that suggests that they have some adrenal issues. Like, for one, people who say, whenever I stand up, I get really dizzy. If I crouch down to tie my shoe, I stand up, I get really dizzy. Or if you actually do it, you can take their blood pressure, and it will go down when they stand up. Generally taken seated. So if we compare that to lying down, we take the person and tell them to lie down, then they will have the blood pressure go down. That's the normal response, not necessarily going to happen. And then if you have them stand up, the blood pressure should rise, and it should rise by about 10 points from lying down to standing. If it doesn't, it suggests that there might be an adrenal problem. And within the 30-day booklet, the protocols booklet, you'll see a list of those different what can happen with the blood pressure and which stages of adrenal fatigue it relates to. And just pupils, you shine a bright light in the eyes and the pupils can't stay constricted. There's some tenderness at the rib margins, which is right around where there's some lymphatic drainage points for the adrenals. Discoloration below the eyelids, brown or black. Back of the tongue tends to be dark gray or reddish. Ulcerations or canker sores, bad breath, rough, flaky cuticles, and tongue signs. And tongue signs meaning, if you were to look up a chart in a Chinese medicine book, you'd see certain signs of of adrenal distress on the tongue. So these are some of the things that you're going to find, and I highly recommend that you get familiar with people when you're sitting across from them. If you're sitting across from them, you can certainly tell if they have bad breath. Doesn't mean that they're going to have all of these symptoms, but when you see a pattern of fatigue and lots of stress in their life and some of these symptoms, you want to be thinking adrenal. And this is just a review, and I wanted to review this because I've given you the full chart of adrenal versus thyroid, because people say, well, the temperature is low in thyroid and adrenal. How do I know the difference? Or what happens to the blood pressure? What's different between adrenal and thyroid? So this is a short version of the chart. And in your materials, you've got the longer version of the chart. And I welcome you to print that out and just use it when you're working with people to just check off and see where they have the predominance. In that chart, there's also a third column, which is the combination, which is very common. It's probably the most common. All right, so let's take a look at what we're going to do with people to help them to balance their adrenals. So the first thing you do want to do is start with the chilling out and the de-stress activities, because that's where it all starts. And when I say chill out, you know, that's the kind of thing like those mental emotional stresses. You can get them doing heart math. But there's also other de-stress activities. You've got to remove the stress. You've got to get them out of the stressful environment. You've got to get rid of the environmental stresses. You've got to look at the diet. There's a lot of things that go into the de-stress. Now, you also want to get them to make sure their blood sugar is balanced, because if their blood sugar is up and down and all over the map, then there's no way that their adrenals are going to come in to balance. So that's a really important piece of this. And a blood sugar balancing diet, the way we teach it in our insulin resistance practitioner training, we teach a very detailed method. You do need to get them to balance their blood sugar, and you can get them to do a 30-day metabolic reset where they measure their blood sugar and they make sure that they get rid of all foods that make it go up above 110, and we go into lots of detail in that other program. You want to heal their gut, because if their gut's not healed and they've got leaky gut or they've got microorganisms, candida or other kinds of things growing in their gut, then their adrenals are going to have a hard time being balanced. So no matter how much chilling out and meditation you do, if you've got a leaky gut that's constantly stressing out their adrenals, they're not going to get better. They're not going to improve. You want to get them moving. Moving is super important. But the trick with the adrenals is you can't get them moving too hard or too fast. So adrenals, you can do very light aerobics, walking, slow treadmill, slow bicycle, but you don't want somebody to go out there and be registered to do a triathlon or a half marathon or even a 10K running race. So really working with people to get them on the right movement for them, because too much movement is a stress for the adrenals and not enough is a stress for the adrenals. We'll show you a little bit more on sleep, but sleep is critical. That's the way they repair. And I've put people on sleep vacations. Sleep vacations are pretty amazing for the adrenals. The nutrients, and we're going to go into details on the nutrients, the herbs, and the bioidenticals. And I look at them in that order. Diet, you know, the lifestyle stuff, the diet, the nutrients, the herbs, and then the bioidentical hormones. Not to say we won't start somebody on the bioidentical hormones, which would be DHA and pregnenolone, right up front if they've got some pretty severe symptoms and they've been in this state for a long time and they've done a lot already. That's the time when I pull in the hard armor. But if they're still, like, expecting that they can eat gluten and white flour products and Crisco and other kinds of canola oil and other kinds of foods that are bad for them and not exercise or overexercise, and take the bioidentical hormones and hope their adrenals get better, they're living in a vacuum. And you want to teach them that that's not the way it goes, that they really need to be having some time to learn all this. Getting back to heart math, that 30-day stress transformation. Sign up for it. Use it. Do it. Teach your people whatever your favorite brand of stuff is. Teach them this if you'd like. This is the stuff that they really are going to benefit from is, for me, it's laying on the beach, and I can't lay on the beach because I have to work here, so I go to the beach in my imagination. Now, if you haven't done that, review it. Love to see people do a sleep vacation, okay, because you want to get them balanced. And basically what a sleep vacation is I like to do it for 3 days because there's a lot of studies and evidence that show that within 3 days you can make up for huge deficits of sleep if you sleep for 12 hours each day, or at least in bed for 12 hours and sleeping for the better part of that time. And that you have, what I, the way I do it for the people is I tell them to go to bed and have a nice sleep and sleep as long as you can, but the next day don't force yourself to get up. Don't set any alarms. Don't make any plans for that day. You just sleep in. And when you're not sleeping, you can pop in good videos and you can do crossword puzzles and you can do light activities that don't stress you out, but you don't do anything heavy duty. And when you do this for 3 days, it's amazing. I remember one person I gave this task to do. I said, 3 days sleep vacation. And we talked again in another week, and she was still on her 3 day sleep vacation. She was just taken. She just like took some time off from a consulting project that she was working on. Said, my health is super important to me. And she did. So she went and did that, and then a week later she was still on her sleep vacation, sort of. You know, she was sleeping in as much as possible. She did it for the better part of a month. She was in bed for 12 hours a day. And she healed miraculously after 16 years of constant weight gain and frustration with everything. She dropped 50 pounds. It was pretty amazing, and her brain fog lifted. And that was very amazing. So teach people about sleep vacations. Get them on the foods that support the adrenals. And I didn't list every single food, but I listed categories of foods. Omega-3 fats. When you have a balance between omega-3 fats and 6 fats, it supports the adrenals. So if you take in extra omega-3 fats, you might be able to balance out the omega-6 fats. However, if you've got somebody who's eating a lot of processed foods, then they're going to be getting a lot of the omega-6 fats, and it's going to crowd out the omega-3. They need to be in proper ratio. Brassicas, those vegetables are pretty darn amazing. Oh, and by omega-3s, I like to look at people, getting people on chia seeds, hemp seeds, walnuts, flax seeds. And I always combine that with a little bit of coconut because it's been shown that the myristic and lauric acids in the coconut actually help the body to convert from the short-chain omega-3s, which are the food form omega-3s in the plant kingdom, down to the long-chain omega-3s, which we usually associate with fish and fish oil. So it's really important. Brassicas are the cabbage family. Cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, the broccoli, turnips, radishes, they're all in the brassica family. They have some special properties that help to support hormone balance. So highly recommend those. Sea vegetables are loaded with nutrients. They're loaded with minerals. So highly recommend sea vegetables and iodine, which is difficult to get. Pumpkin seeds are a good source of zinc as well as being very alkaline forming. Turmeric, awesome spice that supports the adrenals by supporting inflammation in the body. Coconut oil helps the body to utilize the omega-3 fats so much better. Has some MCTs, medium-chain triglycerides, to help support brain health and also help with the short-chain fatty acids in it to help with inflammation. Cumin is another Indian kind of Ayurvedic spice that's very good for anything related to inflammation. Then there's the probiotic foods. Things like yogurt, kimchi, and kefir. And you may be saying, wait, but I thought dairy wasn't a good thing to do for a lot of people. It's not. So you can make yogurt out of coconut. You can make yogurt out of cashews. You can make yogurt out of pretty much any nut or seed that you can blend up. Kimchi is kind of like sauerkraut, only it's big. So kimchi, sauerkraut, fermented vegetables all come in that same category. And then something called kefir, which is basically a coconut water that's been fermented with cultures, with specific organisms, and they work really well to help support your adrenals. And then you've got what we call the adaptogenic herbs. And we'll go through a little bit more about the herbs in a moment, but the herbs that are considered adaptogenic that are most popular are ashwagandha, eleuthero, and medicinal mushrooms. And again, I'll give you another chart in a little bit. So these are examples. This is all from the recipe guide, so I'm not going to belabor it, but make sure that they're getting all these great meals, right? Omega-3 rich dressings, grain soups, wraps, big bowl, and make sure you get the sea vegetables in there. So there's a lot that you can do to help people get on the nourishing meal. And you may already be doing a lot of this. You may already know about greens and sprouts and sauerkraut. Now you know another reason to really encourage your clients to use it. And a big bowl is something I termed a, it's basically you can put steamed or raw veggies in a blended vegetable sauce made from the steam water vegetables and a fat to thicken it. So it could be chia seed, avocado, tahini, nut butter, raw nuts or seeds. And I love this. I just love this kind of concept because it's very filling and very, very diverse and dense. So we all know about these things, right? Foods that slow or damage the adrenals. They're the same foods that mess up with our thyroid hormone, that mess with our digestion, that create inflammation in the body. And whenever you're dealing with anybody with any level of fatigue or any kind of health challenge, it's vitally important that all of these things be avoided. Now, as people heal, it may be less vital that they do it, but it can be pretty dramatic when they go off of it. So sugar, of course, with no nutritional value except for carbohydrate, drains the system of B vitamins, which the adrenals need, especially B5 and B6. Trans and heated fats, which oxidize and they cause free radical damage to a lot of the oxidation byproducts. Allergens, especially gluten, and dairy is a big one for a lot of folks, and eggs for many people, and soy and peanuts and all those sorts of things. Okay, so allergens. And then caffeine, and, you know, a little bit of green tea can be helpful, but the amount of caffeine that most Americans drink is definitely damaging for the adrenals, as is alcohol. So let's look at the most important nutrients. Isn't that to say that this is all-inclusive? It's not. There are other nutrients that have been found to be important. But we know that vitamin C is used by the adrenals more than any other part of the body, so it uses up a lot of vitamin C. Vitamin B5 and B6 are super important for brain health, for the whole cycle of stimulation and, you know, see a stress and stimulate and get this going. B5 is super important for the conversion from cholesterol, which is a precursor to all of the adrenal hormones and the steroid sex hormones, into its constituents, down into pregnenolone. So B5 is super important for that. So if you see somebody who presents to you with exhaustion and they have high cholesterol and low hormones on a hormone panel, that's a suspicion that they're not converting their cholesterol into the steroid hormones, and that might be a B5 issue. And I would usually give a B complex with the B5, the extra B5, and I usually give pretty hefty doses. I'll show you the chart which has all the doses. Omega-3 fats, vitamin B6, zinc, vitamin D, B-complex, magnesium, chromium, potassium. These are all important for various places in the adrenals. And it doesn't mean you have to put everybody on every single one of these, but you've got to look at their status for these. And the most important ones that I find that I start with would be the vitamin C and the B5, and, of course, the fats we do with their diet if they're not getting it, and give them a supplement if they need it. Zinc and magnesium, super important. So it's hard to say if a person's deficient in any of these, they're all going to be important. But your job is to figure it out and determine if they're deficient in any of these that you supplement. And this is a chart, got that in full living color in the 30-day or the protocol document. So I want to just review how we distinguish before we go into looking at presentations in the lab. Somebody who's normal is going to have normal blood pressure, normal energy, good immune function, good libido. They're not going to have salt cravings. They're going to perspire normally. When they're hot, they perspire. When they exercise, they perspire. The rest of the time, they're perfectly normal. And then good memory. When they move into alarm, which is the next state after that, that's the state where the body's producing a lot of cortisol. It's also probably producing a lot of DHEA, too, because it's got the reserves, and it's just on overdrive. But there's no symptoms yet, right? You're not having the negative effects of it. You might have a slightly high blood pressure in that state. The energy might be wired, but there are no pathological changes necessarily because it's early on. At this stage, their immune system's usually just fine. Their libido's still intact. salt cravings are non-existent. They're perspiring normally, and they have memory. So they may have some extra wired type energy, like they're always on the go, 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 the type A's, right? And their blood pressure may be slightly high, but it might be just perfectly normal. From the alarm state, we move into stage one. And stage one is where the adrenals are still putting out way too much cortisol, way overstressed, but it's starting to have its toll. Remember how the cortisol can affect digestion, immune system, sex drive. That's what's starting to happen in stage one. And we'll look at how that presents on the charts. So they may have high or normal blood pressure. The blood pressure could still be normal. The energy might be wired and tired, as opposed to the person who's just wired, high energy all the time. So they may have a midday slump. Usually people say at about 4 in the afternoon they have that midday slump. And then they're wide awake at bedtime. And in the morning, sometimes these people jump right out of bed. Sometimes they don't. It just varies. The immune system might be impaired. These are people who are like, go, go, go all week, and they get to the weekend, and they want to work out, or they want to go golfing or go on a hike, and they wake up with the sniffles on Saturday morning because their body has just, the cortisol levels are like, okay, we can get back down to normal now, and boom, they get sick because they just gotten compromised. Their libido might be low. It might still be okay at this stage, but it might be starting to get low. They're still not having salt cravings, but they're starting to perspire excessively at this point. They think about exercise, they perspire. They go outside in the hot weather, they're wet within seconds. Those are people that are generally in a stage one. Now, none of these symptoms are going to be, like, absolute, because that's just not the way medicine is, right? We have textbook and we have reality. I'm trying to give you an overall picture of the kind of people that you might see that would fall into these. And sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes when you look at the test results, it's very different from what you expected. Usually not, because the more you get experience, the better you're going to be at that. They may have intermittent memory. They may say, you know, I get a little spacey, I forget where I put my keys, that sort of stuff. But nothing really bad. And those people can go on for years like that, just like really ripping apart their system. And if they don't seek help and they don't go get a test done, they can be leading themselves down the road to adrenal burnout. Stage two, the blood pressure is normal, but it also might be starting to get low. With stage two, they're going to be tired mostly, but they may have little spikes of energy. Oh, I got my second wind. Oh, you know, I felt like a little burst of energy. The immune system might be impaired, same thing as, you know, the weekend warrior kind of thing. The libido is probably low. Salt cravings start to happen here, right? You start to say, I'm craving popcorn. I want some chips. You know, I want to put salt on everything. They start to have variations in their perspiration. You know, sometimes they're over-perspiring, sometimes they're not at all. It could be variable, or it could be the same but different from person to person. And then the memory's starting to be there. They're in that brain foggy thing a little bit more, having a more of a difficult time at work. When you look at a stage two on a lab test, as we'll see in a moment, when you look at that, you're going to see that you may not, at first glance and without a trained eye, may think that their labs look normal. And I see this a lot. People will come in with their labs, and they've had their acupuncturist do them, or their functional medicine doctor or chiropractor did their test for them. And those people may be not as well trained as you're going to be at looking at those. And they'll say, oh, you're perfectly normal. But they're not looking at it. Look at that. Everything it's within the normal range. And we'll talk about that when I show you the pictures of those. Then we go into stage three. Blood pressure tends to be low. They tend to be tired all the time or most of the time. Their immune system is likely impaired. They're getting colds or flus. Maybe they even have developed some autoimmune diseases or some allergies, very common in stage three. Their libido is likely low. It's like, who has time for sex? Who has time to even think about it because I'm too exhausted? They usually get strong salt cravings. They're the people who want to put salt on everything. They put salt in their water. And indeed, you should not encourage them to stop. You should encourage them to get as much salt as they need while they're rebuilding, because it is necessary, because they're peeing out all their salt. Perspiration, that by then, they're just not sweating that much. You know, they just don't sweat. They're just not using that function properly, and their memory is usually pretty poor. Again, you know, you're looking for patterns. You're not going to find that somebody has patterns in every single one of these. Does that make sense? once we've determined the pattern and where they likely are, we want to look at the different herbs. And I'm just encouraging you to use the charts that I've given you, because I've given you like 6 or 8 pages of herbs with little descriptions. And then in addition to the descriptions, I've given you the category, stage, at which these tend to be good. Some of them are good in all stages because they're very adaptogenic, meaning that they adapt to what your body needs at the time. They're very mild, and they can be very effective, but they're not going to cause you to be, or your patient to be, over-the-top alert or agitated, and it's also not going to make them fall asleep. So we look at the herbs, and we have a lot more detail. I love maca. Maca is a South American herb, and it's very good at regulating hormones. I know people who take it for adrenals. I also know people who take it with very great success for sex drive problems or for impotence problems or for, you know, PMS and menopausal type symptoms. Ashwagandha is super good for the adrenals, also for the thyroid, also good for blood sugar balancing and liver support. Licorice root is more of a stimulating. You would not give licorice root to somebody in stage one, because licorice, the way it works, is it makes the cortisol last longer. Now, if we got somebody in stage one and they're already producing too much cortisol, we don't want their cortisol to last longer. It's just going to cause more damage. But if they're in stage three and they're not making enough, then what's going to happen is that we want to keep while we're rebuilding the adrenals, we're helping them to make their cortisol last longer, okay? And that can be very helpful. Ginseng there's a lot of different kinds. There's a Eleutherococcus. There's Korean ginseng, Siberian ginseng. And you've got an American ginseng, a lot of differences between them. And I'd encourage you to take the charts and figure out for your patient or client, where did they fall in that realm? It can be adaptogenic. It can be very stimulating for people who need it. It can be very calming for people who don't. Rhodiola. Rhodiola is one of those that you got to be careful if you recommend rhodiola for people, because in high doses, rhodiola can be calming for the adrenals. And in low doses, rhodiola can be stimulating to the adrenals. And it's hard to distinguish and know how your person's going to react and what levels are, what's too much and what's not. So with rhodiola, I usually give it in formulas with other things. I don't just give it on its own. And I pay attention to, do they need like a full-on dose of it because they need to be calmed down, or they need just a little bit to help them get stimulated. Schizandra is a really nice, gentle. It comes as berries. You can actually buy the berries on Mountain Rose Herbs, and you can have people make a little tea from them or chew on the berries. They're actually quite tasty, although they are bitter. Schizandra is really good for people who are wired at night and have difficulties calming and falling asleep. I've had really good success with people doing it at bedtime. Reishi is a mushroom, as is cordyceps and chaga. Those three are medicinal mushrooms. They have different effects. Reishi really is strong for the immune system. So if you're working with somebody who's got this adrenal problem and they also have problems with their immune system, or they've had cancer or have cancer, Reishi can be very helpful with that. You want to make sure that you get a good quality of the Reishi, and if you get them to get the whole Reishi, that they know to simmer it for like hours or even overnight to make a nice tincture. Cordyceps. Cordyceps is a mushroom. It's like my favorite mushroom. It's like what my body craves. Cordyceps is good for energy, like maintaining steady energy and stamina. The athletes use it in China. The Olympic athletes use it in China. It's also good for lungs and kidneys. So I love cordyceps. It's very balancing for most levels. Chaga, it's very nutritious, nutritionally dense. It's also used in a lot of treatments with cancer. It's been had some good research with that, although you never want to tell a patient that take this herb, it's good for cancer. You don't want to do that. But chaga has got lots of studies behind it in terms of widespread effects on the body, and it's very balancing and soothing. Some people don't do well with mushrooms, and that's the case, then you don't put them on mushrooms. But the mushrooms can be very grounding, very nutritious, and very good for getting people into balance. Lemon balm, chamomile, and hops are more of the calming ones. So lemon balm, you can get a lemon balm plant and squeeze open the leaves and keep it by bed and have people do that or have them chew on the leaves. They can make a lemon balm tea. You can do a lemon balm essential oil, but because there's not a whole lot of essential oil in lemon balm, it costs like $65 a bottle for like a little one-ounce bottle, so it's kind of expensive. Let's count lemon balm. But you can actually just have them buy a plant very, very inexpensively at the nursery, probably a dollar or two for a seedling. Let it grow. It grows really well. It comes back every year in my garden. And then chamomile. We all have heard of chamomile, right? Good old grandma has given us chamomile tea to calm us down and soothe us when we had upsets, soothe our tummies. So chamomile is very good. It's good at calming. It's also good for digestive upsets as well. And having some chamomile at bedtime, either as a tea or an essential oil. You can even put the essential oil on people's feet or on their wrists so that they smell it while they're going to sleep. Put a little on the pillowcase or drink it. And if you have somebody that has a lot of issues with sleep, I have them keep some of those tincture bottles right at their bedside. So if they do wake up in the middle of the night, they can dose themselves with a little bit of herb and go back to sleep. And hops is what's in beer, and hops is a very relaxing and sedative type of an herb. It's also, I think it's got some aphrodisiac properties as well. So those are the herbs that you can be using with the adrenals. Again, this is an overview, and we could spend hours on this, and I did spend hours putting together those charts. So just use the charts and use it as a way to learn what the various herbs mean. And if you're already an herbalist, you already know this stuff.